If one big, beautiful bill has left you with one big, confusing question, turn to BHM CPA Group. Their experienced professionals break down complex changes in tax law, accounting, and business regulations so you can make informed decisions with confidence. Simplifying the complex is what BHM CPA Group does best. Don't wait. Visit BHMCPAGroup.com and let's get to work. BHM, because running a business is hard enough. Your finances shouldn't be. Visit BHMCPAGroup.com today.
From the Motorsport Network, I'm Tom Howard, and you're listening to Gravel Notes. Last weekend, the World Rally Championship visited Croatia for round 4 of 2024, and its demanding asphalt roads served up a classic. Toyota's Sebastien Ogier and Vincent Lande emerged victorious from a tense and dramatic three-way fight with title contenders Thierry Neuville and Elvin Evans. Toyota's Sebastien Ogier and Vincent Lande emerged victorious from a tense and dramatic three-way fight with title contenders Thierry Neuville and Elvin Evans to become the fourth different winner from as many events. Ogier has survived a number of moments himself, came through to win following a chaotic 8 minutes that saw lead Giro Neuville and Evans make errors in stage 18. Joining me to discuss all things WRC is my co-driver for this pod, rally journalist who used to be powered by the little fizzy drink, Luke Barry. Welcome, and how are you going?
I'm eagerly anticipating these intros now. Tom's told me that he's planning to find unique ways to bring me in. So used to be a little enthusiast makes me sad because I'm a big lover of that drink until they decided to rebrand it to Fanta, pineapple and grapefruit, whatever it is now. Not the same, even though it is the same. That's not an answer to your question. I'm well, Tom. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad myself. I guess before we crack into the review of Croatia, we've got a little bit of news to mop up. So I think we'll start with a really positive story from this week is that Martin Sesks will be doing a 2-round Rally One program starting in Poland and then his home round in Latvia. The first round in Poland will be using a non-hybrid powered M Sport 4 Puma before then stepping up to the full hybrid powered Monster for Latvia. The WRC promoter has played a big role in making this happen with M Sport to sort of introduce younger drivers to the top tier of the category. I think we're all excited to see how Martins is going to go because he's been very good on the ERC. What are your thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a good story. I think it certainly surprised me the aspect of the non-hybrid part for Poland. And I guess the fact he's doing two events in itself, we'll often see maybe local heroes, which Martin Sesk is for Latvia, get a chance. Maybe they've got a bit of backing to do their home event. But to see him get two, and as you said, to experiment with the non-hybrid part, I think it's super interesting. But it's also really encouraging for him as well, because he has, I guess, a bit of time to learn the nuances of that car. Yes, without the hybrid, but all the aero and the extra power compared to his Rally 2 car, he'll get used to that before he goes into his home event in Latvia. So it's extra seat time. It should help him make a better showing of himself. And as you also said, he's an exciting young driver, very, very quick in ERC, particularly on these events that he's now chosen to do in WRC. So yeah, and I guess the obvious thing, another Rally 1 car on the entry list. We can't complain at that, can we?
Absolutely not. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this non-hybrid powered car in action, just how well it will go. This is also part of new regulations that were introduced for this year that allow teams to run without hybrid power. And in place of the hybrid unit is some ballast put into the car to sort of mimic what would have been there. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about the future and whether we will have hybrid or not next year is still a bit of uncertainty at the moment. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he's also won in Latvia a couple of times. And I think he won Latvia by winning every stage in 2022. So this guy knows those rallies very well. I hope he gets up there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I honestly think he could be a massive contender, particularly in Latvia, because it's not just a home event. It's like Liepāja is his home city. Like it's a rally based, like it's, yeah, it's properly his home, not just his home nation. So I don't know how many years he's done it, but I think pretty much every single year that I can remember following ERC, he's been around in various classes of cars. So he has an advantage over others who, of course, most of the drivers won't have done this event before. So that will count for something. And yeah, he's well accustomed to that kind of driving. So it's just great to see another name get a chance, because it's one of the things I guess we're not seeing at the minute is two problems, really, probably not enough drivers in the top class, but then there's not many new drivers getting chances either. So yeah, I think it's a real feel-good story and a really interesting, I guess, collaboration between the WRC promoter and M Sport to make it happen.
And again, we should sort of, like, there's a nice segue actually about the WRC promoter. We had a roundtable with them in Croatia to get a bit of an update on what's going on in the championship moving forward. One of the interesting aspects about the promotion of the series is that they are looking into bringing in a sort of Formula One style team radio aspect to the championship so we can hear more from the drivers. The system will also be sort of, they will also offer more data to the teams to make this happen as a sort of quid pro quo, is how it was described, situation. So the teams could get access to more data from this project, and also the fans will be able to listen in key moments in stages where things maybe go wrong or go right, or there's something odd that happens that we don't hear on the coverage. I think this is a very cool move, and if they can pull this off, obviously there's going to be a point where teams are going to get probably a little bit upset about some of this, some information getting out, but I think bigger picture wise, this is a very good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think I'm always quite cautious when, I guess, people try and copy F1, because it's potentially a slippery slope in that just because it works in Formula 1, it doesn't mean it's going to work in his other motorsport. But I think this is a bit of a win-win, really, for the WRC. I guess for the teams, like, getting the extra information is the trade-off to allow them to want to have some of these conversations, I guess, exposed. But what for me is exciting is, for you and I, who are obviously massive diehard rally people, it's something we don't really understand. So that in itself is exciting. There's not many things that us hardcore don't necessarily know what happens. So it's great for us to get that extra insight, but it makes the whole event, I guess, much more relatable to those that maybe don't know so much about rallying, which I imagine is really the ultimate goal here, isn't it? Is to try and keep introducing our sport to some others that maybe aren't quite so aware of it. So this is an easy way to help build that sort of knowledge bank of others about what goes on in a rally, and I guess expose characters to the world as well, because that's the big thing that I think everybody would agree that Formula One has done so well in the last few years, is the characters and all the drivers, everybody knows them and relates to them in one way or another. In rallying, a lot of the time, I imagine, and I say I imagine because obviously I know this sport very well, but they're just names. They're not people. People don't understand what everybody's like. So it's another way to, I guess, introduce that side and the personal side to all these engineers, drivers, co-drivers, etc. So yeah, I'm really quite excited to see how it should all play out.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And I guess now we should start talking about what we really want to be talking about in terms of the headline of this pod is our Croatia review. So yeah, what I have to say, I actually titled this as a sort of a great advert for the WRC in terms of the competitive nature, as we had, as you know, there was essentially a freeway fight, as we said at the top of the podcast. At one point, you know, the top three were cut off by 6.6 seconds. And also at the end of Friday, incredibly, Neville and Evans were tied on overall times after 119.74 kilometers, which is just insane to really think about when you put it onto paper and you look at it and you analyze it. It's just crazy. But it was all decided by this crazy sort of 8-minute spell on Sunday in stage 18, where Neville entered the stage with a narrow lead, because Elvin had just sort of fought back. I think it was like 2.3, 2.6 seconds. And then it all sort of just turned upside down. There was a similar errors from Elvin and Thierry. They both found the grass banks in the stage. There was more damage to Thierry's Hyundai. He lost around 23.3 seconds. Elvin lost 19 seconds. And it thrusted Ogier into the lead, who then went on to go and win the rally. I mean, it was one of those rallies. How did you see that, Luke? Because there was, I know I'm waffling on there, but there was a lot to get through on that Sunday, and it really was quite dramatic.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack. First of all, though, I love that use of the word about when you quoted 23.3 seconds. That's not about, is it? You that's yeah. That, which is amazing. But yeah, there's a lot to say, I guess. For me, after Saturday and that performance Thierry put into, they were close all day, Thierry and Elvin. Ogier was on the ragged edge. I guess very lucky to get away with some big moments of his own, particularly on that sort of quick right-hander with Rhea completely got away with him, but incredible car control to just miss that fence. I know there was a little bit of, I think the front bumper was damaged, but I don't quite know how Seb and Vincent got away with that one. So the pace was hot, and Ogier on unequal conditions, because obviously he'd been at a disadvantage on the first day with his lower road position, but unequal conditions to Thierry and Elvin, within reason, he was still losing a little bit of time, not loads. So Thierry and Elvin had a really good battle. Thierry had it sort of a small advantage. I can't remember the exact gap, but at that point, I kind of assumed this was Thierry's rally and that was kind of going to be it. But how wrong was I? Everything just kicked off, particularly in that first run of the power stage, which obviously cost Adrian Formeau as well, which we can get to later on. But yeah, massively dramatic stage. And both of them, the two title contenders, both blinked at the same time. The sort of pathway was cleared for Ogier to sneak through, and he took, I guess, I don't want to call it an unlikely victory because it sort of demeans the quality of his drive, but I think even Seb would be the first to admit he didn't wake up on Sunday morning thinking he was going to win the rally. So he was perfectly placed, did exactly what he had to do, and managed to steal the win when the other two faltered.
I was going to say, it was a really good battle between, you know, essentially these other title contenders. These are the two that we think or look like at the moment to be the title contenders. We, you know, it could change, obviously, but they went head to head and you just couldn't separate them. And it was just such a great battle that perhaps in other motorsport series at the moment, we're not quite seeing those close battles. So I think WRC should be sort of praised for putting on a show like that, because it was a fantastic scrap. But let's also dig down into what actually happened there on stage 18 in terms of Neville said that he had a late pace note from Martin Vidergaard, and they've gone straight into a bank. They've slid into there. Let's rip the rear wing off. It's kind of gone sort of Formula One DRS style with no wing at the back, and it was undrivable, and that put pay to what I think. I don't know if you agree, but up until that point, Thierry was driving supremely, and I think you could suggest that it was up there with that Monty drive this season, and would have been one of his finest victories if he'd have pulled it off.
Yeah, there's an edge to Thierry this year, I think, and it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is, but there's just something about him. He just seems so determined, and he's always been so determined as Neuville. We've spoken about it before in this podcast, but I think he probably is the most tenacious driver in the championship. But there's just something about the way he's driving this year. There's something is just working very well for him, and I know there's reasons why it's maybe not quite clicking for his teammate, but I guess it is fair to call it a gap to Oit Tanak is the best proof of that, because we all came into this year expecting those two to be very closely matched. How would they all go together? But Thierry's beaten Oit on every single event this year. Not necessarily on points, which is a topic we can get to, but in the finishing position, he has beaten Tanak at every single rally, which I don't think anybody would have expected. It was a very impressive drive, but it has to be said it was still from Elvin as well, to be as close as he was to Thierry, and I guess crucially for Evans to be quicker than Ogier, because that used to always be the benchmark when Ogier was still a full-time teammate of his. So it was an incredibly impressive drive from Elvin as well. I guess unfortunate for him in the same sense that he also made a mistake on that stage 18, because without that, he would have won the event. He wasn't hamstrung with damage to the car like Neuville was. So, if he was ahead of Ogier, you would have expected him to get the job done. So from that side, it's obviously a shame for him. But yeah, Thierry's driving is at a seriously high level now. I guess the challenge he's got is we're heading into gravel season, and he's obviously at the start of the running order for the first one, which is probably going to give him a bit of a disadvantage. Obviously, his main title rivals, we're seeing, is only one place behind, so they're both going to be struggling, but it is always worse to be first car in. So, and it's only a 6-point gap between them still, isn't it? So, and that's the other incredible thing. Sorry, I'm going off my own tangent on my own, but the gap was so close in the rally, but after all of that driving and all the way the points work this year, the two of them scored the same amount of points this rally, which is incredible. So I think it's a really fascinating fight between those two for sure.
Imagine if this carries on, like obviously you did say, like, you know, and Thierry has said it is going to be a struggle from now on in with five gravel rallies in a row, I think. So, but if they can keep reproducing this level, I mean, what a battle we're going to be in for.
Well, this is the favour that Kai Rovanperä has done. And this is not to suggest that Rovanperä would have walked the championship, but it certainly changed the narrative this year. There's no defending champion. Yes, there's Oit Tänak, who is a champion, but even if he does manage to win the championship, he hasn't won it for 5 years. So it's a bit of a redemption story. You've got Thierry and Elvin that have both been very close to one, but never quite got it over the line. So for all three of them, it's been a massive chance, I guess, to get that done. And it's just super interesting to see the minute differences between particularly Neuville and Evans. Obviously, both driving for different teams and different cars. And you can see there's maybe some events where the Hyundai's been stronger and vice versa. I'm thinking particularly Safari, where the Toyota was stronger, and how that sort of plays to each of their approaches. But the way they go about things, Elvin always looks far less on the edge than Thierry. And I don't know if that's because he isn't quite at his 100% limit, or if it's because he's just got a slightly more, maybe not relaxed driving style, but less aggressive maybe than the way Neuville always makes the car look. When Neuville's on a push, it's spectacular to watch. And I think Evans tends to be a bit more efficient with his driving, but it's just a really interesting dynamic. The two of them have, I guess, history in the past of some very close battles. I'm thinking particularly Argentina that year when Neuville nicked the win on the last stage by less than a second. So there's a good sort of story here of a rivalry, shall we say. So yeah, I think it's, I guess, the battle the WRC didn't know it needed, but it's fantastic to see it play out.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And you're right about Elvin as well. I think we'll see him come stronger in the gravel as well. I do think that these next few rallies could be in his favour. So it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. But yeah, I'd say bring it on. It's such a great it was such a great battle to watch. And as I said, to have that dead heat on the Friday, like it's just unthinkable. Like I think Jari Matti Latvala said, this is something special we are witnessing here. Like we see two people get identical stage times, and that's quite often. Sometimes that happens, but after such a 120 kilometers,
yeah,
to not be split, like my mind just can't comprehend that.
And it gave you an easy headline as well on Friday night, which is always the best thing to think about. So that was an easy way to sell that day's rally. But yeah, you're right. It has been seen, as you say, on individual stages or even after like two stages on a day or something. But for it to have been so many competitive kilometres and for there to be nothing splitting them was, yeah, quite something. But this, I guess, is, I know sometimes tarmac rallying can be described as boring by some that maybe aren't fans of it and stuff, but the gaps, I always think, particularly, I guess, because although there is a difference in road position, it's not as pronounced as on the looser surface. So the gaps between the drivers now, it's so close, so, so close, and even closer than, I guess, and I promise I'm not going to keep using the example too much this podcast, but closer than Formula One was at the weekend, and that's a sport that's famously decided by milliseconds. So that, I guess, tells you all you need to know, really.
And yeah, I was just, we should talk about Seb. I know we did sort of, you went into it there, but he himself said it was a very eventful rally and perhaps one of the most eventful he's had. So that sort of says just how tough Croatia is, and I think it has been, like, if you look at the stages themselves and the results of the rallies that we've seen, I think 0.6 seconds for with decided 2021. It just seems to deliver classics, doesn't it? It's incredible.
Yeah, I think I was working this out. I think this is obviously the fourth edition of Croatia. I think this is the third time in that time that particularly the final day has had a massive swing in terms of the lead battle. In 21 and 22, it was the final stage decided the winner, the change of lead there. So there's just something about it that is creating classic events. And I guess, obviously, the roads are difficult. They're quite undulating, quite cresty, which is rare for tarmac. Obviously, in plenty of places, quite narrow, so you're quite slippery in terms of corners being cut and everything else. So there's just something really challenging about it that seems to create this drama. Because obviously we've seen in the past, you've got other tarmac events like, say, Spain, that was always quite close in terms of the gaps because of the way the stages were, the fact they were quite wide and flowing, but it never was that entertaining from a spectacle perspective because there wasn't that much, I guess, jeopardy in the stages. I sound like another rally media personality with the same nationality as me with that word. But yeah, it's Croatia is difficult. It's a difficult event. It's unique. And I guess I know there's conversations about its future in the WRC. I just, for one, hope that they manage to find a way to keep it because I think it really is delivering in terms of sporting spectacle.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that we will see it again next year, which is good to hear as well. But also we should just mop up that given all that drama on stage 18, Evans did actually recover to finish second overall, behind Ogier, and Thierry also finished third considering all what happened there. But you alluded to it earlier. They both scored 19 points. So we probably should tackle this now because it was a big subject at the end of the rally, and it has been now for the last four. The new point system, yes, it definitely has achieved its goal of making Sundays more exciting, but there are people, and Sebastian Ogier was very strong about this, and so was Elvin at the end, that it's, you know, it's weighted too much on Sunday. There are too many points given on Sunday, and I do feel I think I agree with them actually on this. But I like the idea of the point system, but yes, I do think that there's too much weight now on the Sunday. I suppose the classic example from this rally is that Oit Tanak, who finished fourth overall in the rally, actually accumulated 20 points, one less than the rally winner Ogier. So, and he actually obviously got more points than Thierry and Elvin. So, what do we do here, Luke? Because it's clearly a topic that's not going to go away.
What do we do? That's the big question. Watch that straight at me. What I will say is I think any sort of avid listeners to this podcast will probably know that I've done my best to try and defend it. And I think it's mainly because some of the things I think we're getting levied against it were possibly over pedantic and like didn't have that big an impact on stuff. But this is the first weekend where I think it did offend me, to be honest. And it's not so much that Tanak 1 point less than Ogier or whatever else, as much as Tanak outscoring Evans and Yeovil feels a little bit strange, because I don't think many, and even Oit himself, would think that his performance of the weekend was better than those two. But for me, the point situation detracted from the battle for the lead on Sunday, and that's the thing that we haven't seen so far, because on all the other weekends, as much as it was quite close in the Monty, Thierry just stayed out in front and extended his advantage. In Sweden, Lappi was well clear, and Safari, same with Robin Perra. So we didn't have anything that would have been sort of captivating, should we say, without the point system, but this time we did. The rally was that finely poised, and obviously it went the way it did, where it got quite chaotic. So obviously that was a talking point, but it did, to me, it's the sort of excitement of that would have been bigger if we still had last year's point system. And that for me was the shame. And what do we do is a big question, because you could change things mid-year, but you need the agreement of every single competitor to do that. And then the problem is it sort of undermines everything that's happened before, because the way certain drivers have approached certain situations this year, and I guess tactics to make the most out of the system that's there, that's then all completely undone because it's all changed. So a change mid-championship, I think, is probably not the best call, but I would say I'd be disappointed if the point system stayed exactly the same in 2025. I do quite like the idea of trying something different, but I'm with you in the consensus that I think there's too much of the weekend depends on Sunday. And it's almost as if, well, don't want to say this. For me, I would just have rallies end on Saturday, I'll be honest. As much as that will probably offend a lot of hardcore fans, I just, the way rallying is now, it's not like it was. It's not the same length. And there's so many reasons for that. It's never going to be like it was. So I think by Saturday night, generally speaking, like imagine if that was the finish on Saturday at the weekend. Yes, we had that dramatic Sunday, but that was still a really interesting and captivating fight for the win. It was a good rally. Obviously, Sunday added stuff, but to me, Sunday could almost be like a bonus event. So at the minute, you've got the Saturday winner, who obviously claims his 18 points for first. I had to remember what the number was there for a second. But that, to me, that could almost be the rally winner. And then you've got, and it wouldn't be quite like the golden stage that Cyprus is doing the Intercontinental Rally Challenge, but there was that stage was like, I think it was two runs over the same piece of road, and the best time out of the two would win. I think it was about €100,000 or something incredible. That's obviously not going to be feasible in terms of a cash prize, but almost as if the Paris stage became like almost more like an F1 qualifying session. We had maybe two or three runs over it, and people got knocked out, and it became this big tournament style thing. And that's like a showpiece event to sell to TV and everything else. But that would sort of solve problems for me, because you then still got a rally winner. And I guess no confusion about who scored the most points in the rally. Then you've still got another sort of gimmicky, feels like the wrong word to use, but like a sort of different products to sell that's a bit more entertaining, a bit more lighthearted, I guess more accessible. I don't know. I'm kind of spitballing here live on air, but I certainly think with how strongly, I guess, particularly the feelings are of Ogier and Evans, and in fairness, I don't know of really many top drivers that are fans of it. Some of them will be, I guess, quite diplomatic in their response and not say either way, but that in itself tells you they're not huge fans of it. If they were, they would tell you. So I think a change will need to come, but I would, yeah, I'd be cautious about doing it rashly and too soon, if that all makes sense.
No, I think it does. I quite like the fact you're spitballing there and throwing things out there. I think it's interesting also, it's had a great insight for the listeners into Barry's brain and how it works, isn't it? Just to see what's going on up there. But
that's a scary. But yeah, nobody wants insight into that, Tom. My word.
But you're right. I think one of the suggestions is maybe making the Sunday points, the top points for the Sunday Super Sunday classification, being 5 rather than 7, and doing it as a 5-4-3-2-1. And then having the power stage, which would, it's a small change, and it's something that could be, you could easily see that would happen next year, because no one's losing any face over that, and you still get the desired outcomes, but they're not as exaggerated, shall we say, as what we've got at the moment. So that could be the sort of compromise that we see for next year. I don't think it will change this year. I think we'll see this have to play out, but it's such a difficult one, isn't it? Because you're right, it's not right, but it has sort of fitted the bill of what it was supposed to do, which was make Sunday exciting. So it's like it's achieved one goal, but it's done it in a way that hasn't quite worked in the other aspect. So
to summarize it, I guess, is a very quick point, but that is the weird thing, is it's fixed a problem but created another, I think. But yeah, in fairness, the 5 points for Sunday would be quite a neat way around it. The other thing for me that I think is strange while we're talking about it is that you have to finish Sunday to get your Saturday points. I'm not quite sure why that was added, because I don't really know who that benefits per se. It feels a bit strange. Like, for example, say if it's a driver mistake, I guess you could argue then, fair enough, you've made that mistake, that's on you. But, and I know it's a team sport, and if the team, like if a car breaks down, you could argue, well, that's your package, it's gone wrong. But if you're, I don't know, second in the rally or something, and you retire on the last day because you've got a mechanical and you lose all your points, that's very harsh. But you've got somebody that crashed on Friday can come back and get 12 and stuff. It's a bit, so yeah, it's a waiting thing, isn't it? There just needs to be a bit less on Sunday than there is, I think.
You're absolutely right. And also, I suppose that there is the reason why you bank your points on Saturday and only sort of actually collect them on the Sundays. I guess that if they said, right, you've got those points now for Saturday, then some people might just not turn up Sunday. Do you know what I mean? Because they'd be like, well, I've got 18 points.
That's a fair point, actually. Yeah.
Why would they turn up to try and fight for 12? Yeah, there is some aspects. I mean, it's unlikely, but it's something that could happen, couldn't it? So anyway, we've talked enough now, I think, about the points, but I think everyone knows and is our views on that. But we should move now to Oyts, and we did mention him there earlier, obviously, with this points conversation. But he finished fourth overall, but he's obviously ended up with some very healthy points. But it was another struggle for him. He just was struggling with the sort of nervousness of the rear end of the I-20 on asphalt. Hyundai have sort of made it clear that, you know, the car isn't perfect on asphalt. Andreas Mikkelsen also suffered with the same issues, struggling with it. And Thierry even mentioned on Friday that he was battling, but he has this way to sort of drive around it, which is quite remarkable. But, I mean, for Oyts, he's probably going to be sort of mixture of sort of frustrated and happy by what the points were in the end of it. But I guess he must be desperate now for the gravel rallies where he can really show what he can do.
Yeah, Super Sunday bailed him out in Croatia, didn't it? Let's be honest, because realistically, he was in any other scenario, he was looking at another deficit to Elvin and Thierry, but he ended up not only maintaining it, he gained a point back. It's only a point, but it's something. So that's the silver lining, 100%. But I think there'll be cause for concern about how he's sort of, I guess, not been able to live with his teammate in most scenarios, as you just said there with the question. The gravel season now is key, particularly Portugal, where he's going to be starting fourth on the road. So that's obviously better than Evelyn and Thierry, so that should give him an advantage to use. There'll be others, obviously, further down the road order that, I dare say, fellow world champions of his that could get in the mix as well. But yeah, finding that feeling on gravel is key. And he's hinted at that actually in Safari, obviously it's a very specific event, but he was relatively happy with how things were. So that's encouraging. And he's not a million miles off the lead of the championship. I don't have the points in front of me and I'm not going to stall air to find out what they are, but it's about 30-ish points, I think, isn't it? He's off, maybe it's slightly more, I'm not sure, but it's not insurmountable. It's obviously not ideal, but it's not, with how many rallies were forwards, with 9 events left, it's not impossible to make that ground up, particularly if he's able to capitalise on better start positions in his rivals if they keep being at the front of the championship. So I wouldn't say it'd be easy to turn around and say, oh, well, he's out of the championship now, this and that and the other, but I don't believe that to be the case. He's obviously facing an uphill battle, and I think there's a few, including myself, that we're expecting, I guess, maybe a slight renaissance in Croatia. It didn't quite come, but yeah, it's the same as he was saying last year, actually, at M Sport. How he performs and how he feels, I guess, more pertinently in Portugal will be quite telling for how the rest of the season is going to go.
Absolutely. And I think we will now move on to the driver that replaced Oids at M Sport, and that's Adrian Formeau. We mentioned him a little bit at the top of the order. So he was one of those that got caught out in stage 18. He went over a compression and the car sort of darted to the right and clipped a anti-cut device, which broke the steering arms of the car. He managed to pull over to the road, and actually him and co-driver Alex Corrie have managed to fix it. It took them 16 minutes, but they did manage to fix it. And then not only did they do that, they came and won the power stage, which is incredible, which just praises their handiwork, I suppose, because like to have the confidence to not only push a car that you've repaired, but also push it on the stage that you had the drama in the first place, takes some real guts, I think, don't you think?
Yeah, it was a nice response to what had happened, as you say, particularly on the same stage that had cost him. But yeah, I guess in the sense it was a disappointing result for him, given what happened. And it was a small mistake. Effectively just, I think, lost the car a little bit over a compression, smacked one of these anti-cut devices, and obviously they're made of metal. Are they made of metal? I think most of them are made of metal, aren't they? But
yeah,
obviously when you're traveling at speed, that's quite a significant impact. And depending on where in the car you've hit, it could be a puncture, it could be, I don't know, something less severe. But in Adrian's case, it hit exactly the wrong part of the car and broke the steering. So I think he very soon found out that when he tried to turn right on a corner just after the hairpin, that it wasn't going anywhere. I do always get amazed at the fact that these crews can fix these parts, because you just, adrenaline is pumping, you're sweating, you're in all your race gear, and suddenly you got to become a mechanic on your own car. It's one of the things that I really do love about rallying, and it's hard to picture yourself how that happens, because I don't know if it was me, and granted I'm not particularly mechanically minded, but I'd be sitting there for minutes trying to work out what to do. But these guys, as much as he kind of knows that he's not in it, particularly because it's Sunday and it's not about the result, it's about the point, he knows he's not got much to fight for, but they still do it as quickly as they can, because that's their nature. Everything has to be done in the quickest time possible. So yeah, I thought it was an impressive effort to get that all fixed in the time they did. And as you say, that power stage performance, it was dominant, really. He was, nobody else was anywhere near him, to be honest. And that's 2 stage wins for the weekend, which I think puts him up to 6 for his career. So that's a third claimed in that event. So as much as there wasn't a podium result, there's still plenty of positives. The pace was clearly there. I know there was times he was a little bit frustrated with his speed, I think particularly on Friday's first stage, wasn't he? So that's probably a lot of, well, to be fair, I can't remember where his time was. He wasn't miles off. He wasn't obviously on the leading pace, but I guess the front two had a bit more experience in that situation than Adrian. But yeah, I think it was still a very positive weekend and a great bounce back, as you said, and a fantastic birthday present for Rich Milner as well, to give him 5 points for the Paris stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it again outlines where Adrian is at, because, you know, he was fifth and battling with Oitz on, they were fighting for Friday and Saturday. And again, another really accomplished drive, very similar to Thierry in a way. In fact, it was sort of like Blossetti's copybook on the final day. But if you did take that out of it, it was actually a very, very, another very good performance from Adrian. He's really, as I said, he's him and Thierry, perhaps the drivers that have maybe stepped up a little bit this year. But yeah, again, it also, what was interesting was that when we spoke to Rich about Adrian's performance on the Friday and the Saturday, he's saying that he now is like less worried watching him on the television, because he's now sort of got this confidence that he's not going to be having an accident all the time, and he's going to be driving sensibly, which is quite an interesting thing for a team principal to say. Unfortunately, he did have that little mistake on the Sunday, which was a comment. He said that before then, but it was quite interesting that there is now sort of a mindset shift within the team now, that they are now sort of expecting Adrian to drive like this all the time and are less on edge when they're watching him.
That's music to his ears, isn't it? I think that's the biggest compliment you can be given, really, given the situation and the questions, I guess, that hung over his head heading into this year. I don't think there are any questions about swinging over FOMO anymore, apart from one of those like classic what if, when will the win come? I guess the same with others like Takamoto Katsuta. But no, I think he's proved a lot of things already in just four events. I just hope that if there is a major setback, he continues to keep that momentum up. Because I guess we saw it in Croatia there was a setback and he responded. But in reality, that setback didn't cost him very much. So it wasn't like a rally-ending issue, or it didn't cost him loads of points, because he still banked his points from Saturday. So his penalty wasn't huge for what happened. But no, it's super interesting to hear Rich say that, actually, genuinely. I didn't know we had. So that's a big indictment for where he's got to in his career. And he's proven himself more than capable of not just leading this team, but actually fighting for genuine positions, as you say. I know Tanak isn't necessarily firing on all cylinders at the minute, but to be with Oit is incredible, really, considering where the two of them are at in their respective careers.
And also for M Sport, there's some positive news in the fact that they debuted their new rear wing. But what was also interesting is that both Rich and Adrian said that they've been doing a lot of work in the simulator at Full Performance in America. And they're really starting to see benefits from that now, which is quite an unusual thing. I know like simulators are very popular in other motorsport categories. And with limited testing and rallying, it does sort of make sense to use those assets when you can. And if you've got Full Performance in Detroit that you can use, by all means, you should go there and take advantage of it. And they're actually finding a lot of results and positive results from this, which is really encouraging for them when you consider that they perhaps don't have the biggest budgets compared to Toyota and Hyundai.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, we all knew that the rear wing was the new part on that Puma, but teams are always finding little ways, even if it's not a genuine new part, just to fine-tune and improve things. And that's, I guess, one of the things that maybe people forget about the Rally 1 cars, is just how aerodynamically efficient they have to be. It's not just the hybrid system that makes them unique. And we've seen this in the case of Mikkelsen adjusting to the Hyundai this year, is that the aero and the speed you can carry into corners because of that aero is, it takes a while to get your sort of brain used to. So it all counts. It's not quite the same as other, I guess, maybe circuit racing formats where aero is everything, but it's a very significant part. So yeah, great that M Sport have that opportunity to use that facility that Ford Performance have.
And Takamoto Katsuta, now, he had the excellent podium in Safari, but he's always found this rally quite tricky. And again, on Friday and Saturday, he was really sort of quite downbeat on what he was performing in the car. And it's always hard to sort of see him like that because he's such a likable character. But he did really bounce back on the Sunday. And this is where the sort of like the Super Sunday really comes into its own for Taka, is that he was excellent on Sunday and showed the progression he'd made throughout the rally. And this, again, he leaves the event feeling very confident, positive, like he has in Safari. So this can only bode well for him moving forward.
Yeah, I'm actually struggling to think of too many things to say about Tacker's route beyond the fact that he did what he had to do. We talked about it on this pod before the event. It wasn't going to be one for him to become the hero. It just the way everything in the past is context around it, and it just wasn't going to be his rally per se. But I was, and it feels harsh to say surprised, maybe I should say impressed, that he managed to top Sunday. And I know really Evans and Neuville kind of did him a favor in that regard, but that was an impressive bounce back and progression throughout the weekend, as you said. And obviously earned him a good haul of points as well, which is obviously important. So yeah, that will give him a good lift, a good bit of mental boost heading into Portugal and the gravel. So yeah, no mistakes. Kind of an anonymous route. I was watching actually the highlights program, which is something I don't normally do. It's actually quite nice and refreshing to watch the event as a package, because I didn't manage to, because I was out working doing something else. I wasn't able to follow that much of the event live. So caught up and made sure I was fully aware of everything went on for this podcast, my homework as it were. And yeah, it was quite fun to watch it in that package, but Taka barely featured in it at all, which sounds weird to call that a positive, but actually it kind of is, because it meant nothing went wrong for him. So yeah, just a solid performance, and yeah, confidence building for the next event and gravel and Portugal, which the rally he has done quite well on in the past.
And to wrap up our final two Rally One drivers, Andreas Mikkelsen and Gregor Munster. Now, we spoke a little bit about Mikkelsen at the start of this, and he's been brought in as the tarmac specialist for Hyundai this year, which is sort of kind of odd to say, you know, when given that you look at his background, he's perhaps that isn't what he is if you were going to define him as a driver. But yeah, he had some real struggles, and it was difficult because he had a rally in Italy to sort of prepare for this, but obviously it's not quite the same as Croatia. Yeah, it was kind of hard and sad to sort of see him frustrated, because you know this is his big moment, you know, back in the Rally One scene, and he's not able to sort of he wasn't able last weekend to really sort of have that factor that he wanted to. Contrast that, I guess, to Munster in the fact that he was desperate for a clean rally and he got one, which is exactly what he wanted. He wanted just a nice clean rally, get through, and now he's feeling quite positive now moving forward. So it was a real contrasting of the two sort of aspects for Mikkelsen and Munster. But what did you make of those two?
The two M's. Munster, M&M. There's a little spin-off. Shame they're not teammates. They can't market that. But yeah, Munster's given himself a base layer, hasn't he? As you said, he needed an event where he didn't have any kind of drama, and that's what he got. Yes, the pace is anything to get excited about, but that wasn't the mission for the rally. It was just to get through it and sort of, as I've just said, give himself a layer to improve on and build from, and that's what he's done. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do from there. Mikkelsen, it's disappointing, really, if I'm honest. I was expecting a bit more from him, particularly because he'd had that time in the car the weekend before. As much as it was a different event, I kind of thought we might see a bit more from him, but I am glad that we should be seeing him in gravel next, which more, I guess, of a natural habitat for Andreas, and it'll help us all, and I say us, it's more important for him and the team, but help everybody understand, I guess, if there are lingering struggles, where they are at, because is it a tarmac thing? Is it a Rally One thing? Is it both? Doing a gravel event will answer that question. And yeah, I'm with you. As much as it's a great opportunity for Mikkelsen to be in this team, I think it is a shame for him that he's been assigned the tarmac role, because it's not that he's not a good driver on tarmac. We've seen plenty of great performances from him in the past. He even won his first WRC event on tarmac, believe it or not. But particularly at Hyundai when he was last there, and it was a different car, but that was the thing he struggled with more than anything. So there was a great sense of irony that he was sort of picked by that team to then become its tarmac driver. So I do wonder if there's a case of that going on. Maybe the same sort of driving characteristics that were still baked into the car then maybe exist a little bit now. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I've not had the chance to speak to Andreas or anything about it, so I can't confidently say. But I think, yeah, at his next event, I think it'll be important for him to show a bit more speed, because otherwise there will be some people asking some unfortunate questions, which is unfair, because we've seen how great he is continually, particularly last year, the back end of WRC2 season, to sort of get that over the line. So he's not a driver that's lost talent. It's just something that's not quite working at the moment.
Yeah, and just to sort of mop that up, Rally Poland it appears that is where Andreas will be next. It's what he's told us in the media pen on Sunday. But yes, it was down to the sort of this nervous I-20 on asphalt, really, I think, is where the sort of big issues lie. But again, it's a difficult one for and Hyundai. They can't really fix it because of the amount of jokers that requires. So it's an interesting one, but hopefully we'll see a much better performance on it, on gravel, shall we say. But we should now just quickly move on to WRC2. Yeah, a dominant performance from the Citroëns. They were really untouchable. The Citroëns came in with a couple of little minor upgrades as well to the air intakes and stuff. So yeah, Nicolai Gryzin could not be touched, really. It was a real, as sort of, given that we were hoping with Pepe Lopez coming back after the Monty antics that they all took part in, it was really a very sort of one-sided affair. And Gryzin won from Johann Russell, who had a puncture, which cost him about 30 seconds. So that sort of put pay to his victory hopes, but a very, very dominant performance from Gryzin.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's surprised that Citroën managed to win in Croatia. I was doing some research and they've never been beaten in WRC2 on this event. So that's not a shock. I personally am surprised it was Gryzin C3 and not Rossells that managed to win. And that's probably actually unfair on Nicolai because he's long been particularly quick on tarmac. Obviously, his Monte battle we're referencing is a clear proof of that. But yeah, obviously, as you mentioned, Rossell had the puncture, but Gryzin had the measure of this one. This was his rally. It was his performance. So yeah, really impressive. Important points for him. A great result for Citroën with their two, I guess, works cars, if we can call them that, first and second. So they've dominated the event. Yeah, not too much more to say beyond that, really, other than I think it was actually a very clever decision from Greensmith, Solberg, Piari, et al. To not nominate this one. Solberg wasn't even there. Greensmith and Piari actually had a quite entertaining battle for what was third in class rather than the championship. Piari got that one by 0.3 seconds, despite clipping a bridge on the final stage. So a little bit of drama there. But yeah, I think they would have all known that this is Citroën territory. So why take the risk of trying to nominate this one and score points when it probably isn't your strongest event? I guess my particular shout out there is for Oliver, who last year I know was quite keen to prove he was quicker than everyone by doing the rallies where everybody was at. This year he's sort of talked about this new strategy, and not doing Croatia, I think, was the biggest sort of sign of where this new strategy is taking him. Having said all that, pretty much all of them are out there in Portugal, so someone's going to be losing out in terms of championship points, but that makes it entertaining for us to watch, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and we will get onto that with our Portugal preview. But now it's time for our sort of usual wrap-up of a rally, and we have a few categories that we like to have a spitball over and see what we think. And our first one, as always, is star of the rally. Now, Luke, where are you going with this?
It's just the point where I reveal that we kind of scrabbled this together just before the podcast and haven't thought about it much. Maybe not. I didn't have to say that, did I? We're professionals. Of course we are. My star of the rally is Romet Jørgensen, FIA Rally Star driver. Second in Sweden was impressive. I think this performance in Croatia to win and win comfortably was huge. He wasn't leading from the very start. That was Ali Turcan. But when he crashed, Jørgensen had about, I think it was 30, 40 second lead, and he just managed it from there. He now has about a 20-odd point lead in the championship. Incredible, really. And I guess a real sign of the quality of candidates that the FIA Rally Star program has managed to unearth. Taylor Gill was second, another Rally Star driver. So it's a dream for them, really, to see how good the drivers they've picked are. It probably shouldn't be a surprise that, really, given the depth and of the sort of search program, can we call it? So it probably shouldn't be surprising, but I'll admit that I didn't expect them to be doing this well, certainly not this quickly. So yeah, some real star talents there, if you pardon the pun. And yeah, I think a lot of credit has to go to Jørgensen for that drive, because it was of somebody well beyond his years and experience, I think.
It's a very well made point, and those that actually they were the answers to a category I had later in the list, Luke. So
now I know what that is, and it's a good choice for that as well.
So unfortunately, we will have to repeat that. But I really struggle with this star of the rally because it's difficult. But I kind of want to give it to Thierry because that Friday and Saturday performance for me was sensational. He just, I know he had the road position advantage, but the fact that he was just able to respond all the time to Elvin, whenever Elvin attacked and whenever Elvin got in front, there was just that response, and he just managed to, he just was driving supremely to the point where you're like, this is a different Thierry, isn't it? Like, we're seeing something different. And I think had that error not happened on Sunday, we would be talking about this as one of his finest victories. So I think I'm gonna give it that way. And I know it's not the greatest of answers, but I think that's where I'm going to go with it.
No, that's a good answer. It's a good answer. And actually, the more I think about it, without wishing to sort of give away too much, if you haven't already, what you're about to pick for this next category, I actually think what you've done is smart in giving this category to Romit. Which is a really terrible segue. I'm asking for you to come in and reveal what it is. I'll just do it, Shaw, because I'm talking unsung hero of the rally, which I'll throw back to you to tell us what we already know, I guess. But a really good shout here, in my opinion, what you've done here, because he wasn't talked about much, really, but an incredible performance.
Yeah, my unsung hero was Romit and the FIA Rally Star program, really, because it didn't get a great deal of... wasn't talked about greatly, but if you look at the results, it's sensational, isn't it? For a second round of this program to have a 1-2, and I think Max Smart and Jose Abito were 6th and 7th. So of the four drivers they've got in the top 10 on a 1-2, I mean, the people that have picked these drivers are onto something, aren't they? Like, that's, they've done a very good job in preparing these drivers and finding the talents. And it's all about finding the next talents, isn't it, for this sport? And we can knock the FIA a lot for the things that are going on, and rightly so, they do deserve some criticism. But for the one thing they have absolutely nailed is this program, isn't it? Like, it really is fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any plans to do another, but I think there might be some pressure now because it's done its job, certainly. And I think... I'm thinking about it, I feel like I should have copied you and given this unsung hero, because they weren't really particularly shouted about it. But another driver who I have picked and I want to use, and it's mainly for that Sunday performance, is Taka Katsuto. I think I've actually given this to before. I can't remember which event. It might have been the last one in Safari, I think it was. So it might be 2 from 2 I've given Taka an unsung hero award. But yeah, just barely spoken about all weekend. And I know that's because he wasn't in that epic fight for the lead, but I think the performance to outpace everyone on Sunday, given how, I guess, how important points are to the likes of Tanak, who he managed to seal off, just really impressive. And I just don't think that really got talked about. So that's my logic there. Just a good weekend from Taka all around.
So our next little category then is quote of the weekend. Now, this is always a good fun one, isn't it? Where are you going, Luke?
It's a tough one for me because... as I said earlier, I didn't actually manage to watch that much of the weekend live, so I think I may have potentially missed some golden nuggets. I'm not sure. I'm sure the really good ones would have come across on social. But the one I'm going to go for, and I'm not 100% sure if what I'm about to say here is a direct quote, but it's Gus Greensmith when he talks about how crazy one of the stages was. He just goes, it's a bit mental, innit? And that to me was just, it just summed it up. I was like, yeah, you're right. Entertaining all weekend actually was Gus. I think particularly on Saturday when he ran out of tyres, he put the rain ones or the wet ones, sorry, on the back, and he became a bit of a drift king. Having a bit of fun there, wasn't he? And it was great for the stage side cameras. I thought that was quite lighthearted and funny from Gus.
I've got a few candidates, but I think we should talk about the first one, which is obviously we didn't mention it in the pub, but there was a little bit of a bet or a gamble that went on between Thierry Neuville and Codo and Martin Vidago over a Porsche 911. And this was because Martin said if Thierry posted two fastest stage times on the stage that was 9.11 kilometers, then he would buy himself a Porsche 911. And what did Thierry do? He did exactly that. He duly delivered two fastest stage times. And we definitely know that Thierry was pushing it. That was in his mind as well. There was a bit of his mind on that, which is sort of says a lot about where Thierry is at the moment, that he's able to not only sort of attack, but also think about other things like that going on in the background. Yes, and I did speak to Martin after that, and he said that he did say this with a very sort of smile on his face that perhaps it was probably the most stupid decision of his life, he said. that was quite entertaining. And my other candidate would be, we've got to give credit to Julian Porter for asking these questions at this stage end, was he asked Seb if he would help and give Elvin the victory. And Seb said, well, of course, if he can pay a lot, but may the best man win. And Elvin's response was, I don't think I've got the same amount of money that Seb is asking for. So that was always a nice bit of tongue-in-cheek. But as it went, it wouldn't have made much difference if there was team orders played anyway due to the point system anyway. So it didn't really make any big options. So I guess that moves us on to our final thing, which is our biggest takeaway. And where are you going with this, Luke?
Am I allowed to have two? Because I generally, my mind is split between... Okay. I guess one a positive, one a negative, really. And positive is just how epic slash close this Thierry Elvin battle is. It's not showing any signs of slowing down. The two of them are so incredibly closely matched. I think just the ferocity of that. And as I say, the big thing for me was the fact they were outpacing Ogier. And we know how good he is on any rally, really. But particularly always been strong on tarmac. So that, yeah, I think the sort of level those two are performing at. And the negative is the points. inevitability of something needing done at some point in the future. It did kind of kick off this time, didn't it? So those are my two. But let's focus more on the positive one and how great this championship fight is looking to be.
Yeah, I think for me it's the if Elvin and Thierry can keep delivering this, and it's as similar as you, but if they can keep delivering this, we are in for an absolute treat in terms of this championship battle. So long may it continue. I want more stages of identical times. I want more of this. But I know that's asking a lot. But I've got to say, great advert for the WRC at the moment in terms of if you look at it from a competitive aspect, it was superb.
Yeah, no, there's not too much I can add there. I'll use your favourite line, actually. I'll say I couldn't agree more, Tom.
I think I need to change my line now.
I take it. It means that I'm clearly not talking too much nonsense if somebody else agrees with me. So I always like it when you come out with that one. It suits me anyway.
Well, Luke, that's all we've got time for today. A big thanks to Luke for his insights, and remember to log on to autosport.com and motorsport.com to keep up to date with all the latest WRC news. Be sure to join us for a special edition of Gravel Notes where we sit down with championship leaders Neville and V. Durga. So once again, thank you for listening.